evening, everybody, and welcome back to Get the Trunk. It is a pleasure to see you again. It's been a week, a long week, but we're excited to be back, gathered around the virtual table to hang and play a little Delta Green. I am drinking a beverage that I've heard about a lot from you guys, particularly Troy and Sydney, but has not been part of my repertoire before. It's carbonated beverage called kombucha.
Yes. Wow.
And this is, I want to get your opinion. Well, I have two questions.
Is that a Kirkland brand kombucha? This is
first, I want your opinion on Costco booch.
That's insane. I love it.
And then my second question is, and I'm not joking, what is kombucha?
It's a fermented tea.
It's a fermented tea, yeah.
What does fermented mean? Just old?
No,
it's old tea.
It's old tea.
It's old.
It gathers.
I bought it because you guys always rave about it. I tried to buy it in a regular deli one time, and it was more expensive than a beer. So I was like, no thanks, and just bought a beer. And this was like, it was Costco, so it's cheaper. So I tried it.
Do you like it?
Yeah.
What flavor are you rocking with?
Ginger lemon.
Oh, that's a classic. That's good. Yeah, yes. I mean, it's fermented. You can ferment it with like the fruits or like ginger and stuff. And basically it adds the good bacteria, the good probiotic or prebiotic stuff. So it's good for you.
Your gut biome, you're building your gut biome. It can aid in digestion. It's really good for you. It's also good to mix with beer.
Is it really? Or is it bad to mix with beer?
I did that once in Indianapolis during brunch. They had
you mean literally
booch.
Mix?
Like a light beer?
Yeah, like you make a shandy, a booch shandy.
But by itself,
dude, it's good. There was a time when, like, before I had health insurance, where it was like Advil and a kombucha was all I needed.
This is my health plan.
Yeah, this is Dr. Booch.
Paging Dr. Booch.
With his nurse practitioner, Motrin.
I truly don't know what, like, when I think of fermentation or fermenting, all that means to me, I know nothing about it. So I assume it's just fruit that lays around. Like, that's all I know. Yeah, so is it just like in water and over time it dissolves and creates
yeast
a carbonation?
Eats the sugars and creates, it's like just like making beer.
It just sounds just like making beer.
Yeah.
When you make kombucha, I've made homemade kombucha and it is like trad wife territory. You guys know trad wife? Traditional wife. It's very popular on Instagram. You make stuff from scratch and then you're called a trad wife. But I'm in my trad wife era. I love making stuff. Kombucha is hard though. You boil all the tea. You can use any tea. Normally you use like a black tea because it does the best with the sugars. And you just dump a fuck ton of sugar, like a lot of sugar. And you're like,
just regular like Domino sugar from the grocery store.
Like, right. Granulated sugar. And you're like, this is too much sugar. But basically the tea, like Troy said, like the tea eats the sugar and then you leave it in a big container in a dark cabinet. And then when you open it up later, this like disgusting looking film on the top has occurred and it's called the mother. And it's like when you make yogurt, you can keep your mother and you can like make more kombucha with the same mother and it grows
like a sourdough loaf.
Yeah. It's like a sourdough starter.
It's exactly the same. It grows like thicker and thicker. You can peel layers off and like give friends part of your mother and they can make their own kombucha with your recipe.
You can slice your arm mother. Open and pour mother into you.
Yeah. Give me mother.
Become mother.
So wait, you skim the mother off and then drink what's underneath it?
The mother stays
skim
and basically
mother off.
You're a mother. I was gonna say that sounds like a bad mother.
It's a bad mother.
Talking about
a bad mother.
Talking about the boots.
But you keep that, and it's basically a two-step fermentation. So that's the first part, and then you bottle it, and then that's when you add like fruit, like pineapple, and you put it in the fridge, or you keep it in the cabinet, and then you put it in the fridge to stop the fermentation process. So it takes like a month. You constantly have to be like making new batches to keep it going. It's a whole thing, but it's awesome, and you learn a lot about the process.
So did you do it one time and never again?
No, I did it for a long time, and I learned a lot about burping bottles, which is something you have to do to not make them explode, which I didn't know. So I would finish the fermentation, and I'd have these beautiful, like, what are they, like the pop cap bottles, like the suction. You, like, push the lever down, and it
suctions. Oh, yeah, like a bottle of Grolsch?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I would like finish the fermentation. I'd be like, can't wait to try my kombucha. And I would open it and it would just shoot out to the ceiling, to the cabinets. Oh, and I did it for months and it kept happening. And I was like, there's gotta be, I'm losing all my kombucha and it's making my kitchen a fucking mess. And then I learned you have to like halfway take the bottles out and just burp them and you take the top off and you let them breathe. But man, I love kombucha. It's so cool when you get to make it. You learn a lot about it.
Yeah. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. It is very tasty, but it is expensive. And now I kind of see why. It's a long process. It's the same process as brewing a beer. Like it takes time and a lot of energy. And
now you got to try all the flavors. You're going to get really into booch. Yeah,
GT's kombucha is my go-to. They make a ton of flavors. You go to like a good grocery store, they'll usually have a ton of flavors. But now it's carried in even the shitty grocery stores. But GT's is my brand of choice.
There's so many brands out there now, too.
Do you still regularly drink kombucha, Troy?
I'll do it like, as
do
like...
Do you have some every week? Or
When I'm trying to like... When the day's done and the kids are asleep, I need flavor. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm trying to like, all right, you know, I don't want to have a beer tonight, I'll have a booch instead.
Yeah.
Because I just need flavor.
It's a good alternative to a brewski. Francis, how many booches have you had in your time?
You know, I actually...
You've been suspiciously quiet.
Because honestly, I did have... Well, I did get kombucha for the longest time because I think I had... Somebody had given me tastes of like something nasty that was just like... I was like, I don't get this. Why is this like bubbly tea that tastes bad? I don't like this. And then, somebody recently gave me a... delicious one that was like also I think ginger and lemon, and I was like, oh, I get it now. It was like very tasty and it did make my gut feel better, and I was like, okay, I understand this, but I'm not gonna make it.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna move on and just get to the show in a second, but I do not understand still, I don't know if you guys do, why with the same fermentation process and all the sugars, why is there alcohol not involved?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, how does there's a alcohol little alcohol happen?
There is a little alcohol.
There is a little booze alcohol in there?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wasted.
All right, now
let's
listening.
Go.
I'm listening.
Yeah.
Trace amounts. Don't give it to a baby.
Don't give that to your babies.
I'm not supposed to do that.
Okay. Good to know. Thank you. All right. Yeah. Let's get back to business. Let's get back. To a wild run here of impossible landscapes as we're closing in toward, man, more and more things happening. But lately, it's been hectic. It's been a run. Literally, the agents are on the run from the Boston police, the Massachusetts State Police, as they have been falsely identified in the media or in the press as escaped patients from a mental hospital in the Dorchester neighborhood of Boston. Well, you guys managed to escape Massachusetts, sneak on a train in Providence, Rhode Island, and get yourselves back to New York City. And while there, knowing that you have to get, or at least Neil is adamant that he wants to get to the Hotel Broadalbin, and Roger is on board 100%. Vicky, of course, wants to track down Sam, and Christopher wants to meet them. And as you get back into New York City and start to even remotely get settled, you think maybe the hotel can be found by going to the location of the McAllister building, where it all started in 1995 on East 32nd Street. And so you head down there at like midnight, the night that you arrive, and you are attacked. You don't see the hotel anywhere, and you are attacked by gas mask wearing creatures of some kind, people, we think, but they seemed, after you managed to kill one or two of them, to be already dead. Very disturbing situation. And one of them looked like Christopher. And a third got away, ran off into the streets and was not found. Well, then police sirens started going off and you guys had to flee the scene of this like gunfight that you got into. And while fleeing the scene, you decided to flee toward Madison Square Park, which is where you remembered from 1995, the location of the hotel was at one time. Now, in 1995, you went to this intersection at 24th, at West 24th Street and 5th Avenue, right at Madison Square Park, and there was no Hotel Broadalbin there. You thought perhaps it was gone, like it used to be there back in the 50s or the 40s or whatever, and it's just not there anymore. But perhaps it has something to do with going there at night. Perhaps it has something to do with going there now at this moment in time with what is going on with you and where you're at, where you're all at mentally. There are a lot of question marks, but we ended last week with you coming out into Madison Square Park in the shadow of the William Seward statue and looking across and seeing the exact hotel that was in the picture of the book that you looked at in the New York Public Library back in 1995. And you see these large lions acting as sort of like pillars on the sides of of big double doors with a golden in not engraved. What's the word when it's like imprinted on glass? Like
etched?
It could be gold etched. What's that?
Gold leaf.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. But it's on the windows, I keep thinking embroidered, but it's not embroidered, but bees on the windows.
Embossed?
What's that?
Embossed?
For paper, I think.
The gold leaf. Call it when you paint on window?
Like stained when you, glass?
Oh. No, like paint.
Painting. Engraved?
Print.
I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but you see it there, and I said, you know, outside you saw what looked like a bellhop of some kind in an old school uniform, red bellhop uniform with a little bellhop cap, short fella standing outside, arms, hands crossed in front of himself. And you see this from a distance, and we will just pick up right there and you guys can tell me what you want to do.
I want to go check in.
A groan from Sydney.
Well, I mean, we talked about last time, we were joking, but like Vicky is so tired and she needs to sleep. And part of her is like, we have to go to this hotel anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe we can check in. Maybe we can get a room.
Yeah. And Bobby recognizes this from when he was escaping the giant clown in the night floors there, or the insane asylum there, and he recognizes and he's like, no, this is the way out. This is the way out, the way through.
What time is it?
It's like 1 a.m.
Okay.
There's traffic on the streets in New York, but it's very sparse. Ooh, you'll see.
What
a car
street are
drive
we on
by.
Again? What right now?
What street are you on right now? You're at 23rd and 5th Avenue. 23rd Street and 5th Avenue.
Yeah, let's go in then.
And yeah, you're right there.
I mean, Vicky says, we have to stay together, and I have to get back out in the morning because I have to see my son. Understood?
Roger's just looking around.
Roger.
Yeah.
Roger, with your awareness, I just want you to note that as you look around, you see people, you know, the occasional drunk walking home from a bar or something like that. You see cars moving about and you don't sense any danger. You don't see any sign of any gas masked folks or anybody watching you or anything like that. It seems sort of like a normal 1 o'clock in the morning on a weeknight in Manhattan.
Just want to take it all in case I never see it again.
Now we will see it again, Roger, because we have to see it again, Roger.
Maybe. Kind of feels like a kamikaze mission. Running in there with bombs strapped to our chest, trying to blow it all up.
Vicky's arm is in a sling. Blood is sort of like showing through the bandages that Neil had put on her. Well, then we have to get it over with.
I hope this hotel has a bar.
Hope this hotel has a bathroom. I haven't gone to the bathroom in, I think, 600 episodes.
If you have to go, if you have to go to the bathroom, we are coming with you into the stall.
Oh, right. Oh, Do you remember when Vicky went to...
You went to the bathroom last season.
I did
go to the end of last season. And it was a terrible idea.
I'm never going to the bathroom again.
You went in, you were like, I'm dropping a monster deuce. And so you locked the door. You wanted your privacy. And then, if everybody recalls...
Yes.
God.
The lights went out. You felt like someone was in that bathroom with you. And then when you finally got the door open... It was not the room outside where you were before. Very, very frightening.
Yeah, retcon. She does not say she goes to the bathroom. She's not going to the bathroom. All right. She's looking at Neil. Neil. She expects Neil to kind of lead the way because he has been so adamant about getting to the hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to start just walking in.
Okay. So, Neil, as you walk up and approach closer to the hotel, you are greeted at the front door by this very slim... pencil mustachioed man with this little bellhop outfit on, and he says,
"Good evening, sir. Welcome to the Hotel Broad Albin."
And I give a big flourishing bow,
and he bows as well. "Is there a vehicle you need taken care of?"
"Yes, Model T or later, thank you."
"No, I'm sorry. I mean, do you have a vehicle you need?" "Valet."
"Ah, confused you are. See the sun together, we will. One suite of rooms, please."
"Oh, I'm sorry, I'm just the valet. You can go inside and see if your reservation is ready."
And he reaches out to grab a handle, and he opens up the door for you, lifts off his little cap, and does a little nod. And puts it back on and lifts and opens up this door. And as the door opens, you get a waft of the air inside, and it smells nice. Flowery, almost like a perfume is coming out through the door. It's very welcoming.
I take a big breath. Turn to him and say, "Hotel, no stink." And I take off my jacket, my leather jacket, and I hand it to him. It says, "Pressed neatly."
And I again, sir, I'm simply the valet.
Thank you.
And Neil crosses over the line into the hotel. Do you guys follow in behind?
Yes.
Yeah, we're staying. Vicky is adamant about staying together. She is very worried, and she feels like we're stronger in numbers.
Okay. You walk in through the door of the hotel, and he closes this door behind you.
Roger's just watching. Watching the last crack of the door.
Yep. The door cracks closed, and in that moment, nothing happens. But you see him just outside the door, turn back around, stands there, kind of looks to the left, looks to the right, and then he strolls ever so slowly, kind of off to the right and out of sight, just past the edge of the window where it meets the next wall, as if he's just working down that side of the hotel at the moment, at the hotel entrance. So he just kind of like slowly walks away. As you walk in, you are greeted, like I said, with a welcoming smell, a very light music playing in the background over some speakers, and you realize you've stepped into a place out of time. The hotel has all the earmarkings of what you experienced in the night floors, in that it seems like it's from another era. The hotel lobby is grand in its scope and its... decor. It's kind of lavish, lots of reds and purples and golds and brass banisters and all this kind of stuff. There is a staircase, a beautiful staircase that winds up to a second floor to a balcony. There is, over on the left side, a marble countered greeting area, you know, the front desk, and you see behind it a wall filled with, I mean, high with boxes, and all of these boxes individually filled with what looks like perhaps keys or mail or, you know, all this different stuff, these wooden boxes. On the other side, across from the front desk, through these heavy marble pillars that are in the middle of the lobby, you see what looks like a dining area, seating area with a bunch of tables. And though it is sparsely crowded, there are a couple people around just munching on some food or something like that. And all of them look out of time. Nobody looks like they're dressed like any of you. Everybody seems to be dressed right out of the 20s or the 30s or the 40s or maybe the 50s. Like, it's just kind of all like old stuff. As far as like what it looks like from an architectural standpoint, without going into great detail, I would just say, if you knew a little bit about this, perhaps you do, Neil, as an artist yourself, and you know, maybe that transfers over into architecture a little bit. We talked a lot about Asa Darabondi in the first season and thought buildings and the architecture of his time and stuff like that. There is an element to the construction that is definitively pre-World War II, perhaps early 1900s. But it also looks old. It looks not well taken care of. It's not shiny and polished and new. It looks like an aging hotel. But perhaps, you know, aging as if it was built in the teens and now it's the 50s or something like that, right? But it has not been kind of well taken care of. And there is a man behind the front desk counter who you immediately recognize, Neil, as the same man you saw at the Ritz front desk in Boston when you walked into that hotel, a man who called himself Elmer and, you know, had his like slicked back hair and his mustache and was just politely talking with you. The others, though, hadn't seen this before. As you all take this in, you also, your characters become, you get this feeling like the night floors that you had experienced 20 years ago were the tip of the iceberg or a glimpse into something. When you walk into this space here, you feel like you are at the heart of all of that. You feel like you have entered a space that is not some transient glimpse of another area or an unnatural space. It's hard to describe, but you feel like you are actually there. Like, there is no illusion here, and you are moving in a direction that is exactly where you want to be if your desire is to free yourself of this. Whatever is happening, it's happening here, or it's sourced through here, and you are on the right path. This kind of overwhelming feeling comes over you that everything that has happened ever since you were in Abigail's apartment, every piece of nonsense that you looked at in that room that made no sense 20 years ago, you feel like in this place, you are for the first time, you could actually start putting all of the puzzle pieces together. And that it all moves through this space in some way, as you see all these people and this era. It's like you've gotten to the source of where these things are happening, and you all immediately recover 1d10 sanity. So you get 1d10 sanity back immediately as this feeling washes over you.
You are
zoned in. Get out of here.
10.
Huge.
Huge
Holy
for Roger.
Shit. I was more worried about Bobby and Neil, but
I got 7. I got 5.
7 and 5? Great, yeah. Guys. That's great.
I'll take it.
I got 3, but also Vicky is the one who's been doing the best. So.
Yeah, the most sane of us all.
Yeah, the most. Anyway. That's saying a lot, too.
Oh, what a beautiful zero.
I got to say, though, I don't like that we're getting sanity back by entering into the hotel.
It's just like we're home.
Yeah. No, a treasure trove. I'll also say it comes hand in hand with the knowledge that you are in the most dangerous situation you've ever been in.
Yeah.
But like, you also feel like this is the right path. We're in the right place that we need to be to, you know, get this shit out of our lives, basically. It puts an enemy in front of you in a way. You know what I mean? That you can actually see and feel and taste and touch and
Yeah. What did you say, Skid? He said a target.
Yeah, a target.
Yeah, something tangible. It's like
It's also like what's scarier, the enemy you know or the enemy you don't? Like
just being able to attribute a shape to any sort of threat is automatically going to make you feel more, you know, grounded.
Neil is now walking up and talking maybe to the guy at the desk that he recognizes. Vicky's going through her bag, her big tote, to find, and I'm looking at our evidence board. She wants to find the...
Oh, yeah. The old evidence board.
Old evidence.
Man, that's a lot of game sessions that have compiled.
What's going on here?
A lot of information.
But specifically, she just wants to pull out, to refresh her own memory, the Hotel Broadalbin stationery that Abby had written on. Well, we think it's Abby who had written on this sort of poetic prose about find J.C. Lintz at the Hotel Broadalbin, and then at the end she says, love and kisses Abby. So she pulls this out, her hand is like kind of shaking. She's trying to like read it to stay focused on what our task is here, like why we are here.
Right. So pulling that out and looking at that, we can put that up on screen. It says, find J.C. Lintz at Hotel Broadalbin. Go now, find the hotel, the labyrinth, the author, his bottle. Now, you could potentially, now you have that in hand.
We also have a map that says where J.L.'s bottle is.
Yes, you do. So if we scan over to that on the board.
Oh, yeah.
This is also on... This is the very first thing you ever found, if I'm not mistaken. I just got chills thinking about it, because like, you think about how deep this adventure is.
It's the first place I went, because it's on Hotel Broadalbin stationery. We see there's like a little map.
You genius.
X elevator, basement, WL, and then JL's bottle. J.C. Lintz, presumably.
What do we think WL stands for? Waterloo.
Waterloo, yep.
Waterloo.
Napoleon's in here. Napoleon will be there.
Or
Napoleon's downfall.
WL. There must be someone who's got WL initials.
That's what I'm trying to think. Is it somebody else's bottle? Abigail Wright. No. Wright. L.
WL may not be... It may not be a person, too.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And then
true.
The X is XLF, probably elevator.
Yeah.
But that could be A-E-L-E-N. Let's say it's elevator. Like, you have to take an elevator to the basement, and then we walk. That's how I'm reading it, is take an elevator to the basement and follow that map to JL's bottle. But at some point, we're going to, you know, we may see something on the way that's clearly a WL type situation when we know, like, okay, we got to take the next right. WL may not be a person. It could be like waterlog.
Yeah, let's all keep the code words up to snuff. Guys, when we see a WL situation, we'll all know what that is.
If you see a wet log.
Yeah, a wet
white
lady.
White licorice.
White licorice. We see white licorice. All right, that's our new safety word. White licorice.
White licorice. If we see white licorice, take a right.
Start shooting.
Let's go to Neil. You're walking up to the front desk. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah.
Let's walk up to the front desk, and you walk up to this gentleman, and he says, ah, Dr. Bachman.
Ah, Elmer, man of the sea.
It is a pleasure to see you again. So glad you could make it. And he goes under the desk, and he starts ruffling through some papers, pulls out this piece of paper, and he's just like, indeed, right on time for your reservation. Excellent. Did you have any trouble traveling?
Yes, a bit.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
But very happy to be here now. Safe and sound we are.
Yes, indeed. We've got a nice, cozy room picked out for you. just a moment, and he turns around to this wall of keys of all these like boxes, and he reaches over to one in particular. He pulls one out and passes it across over to you. He says, "You're in room 333 and passes this key over. Third floor, sir.
Okay.
Please let us know if you need anything.
Yeah, I take the key and turn to go, and then I turn back and say, champagne?
Champagne, indeed. We could have some sent up.
Champagne Ayala, if you will.
Absolutely, sir.
Gonna have a little celebration. Thank you.
Excellent. And he kind of looks past you at the others, at the three of you that are kind of standing behind Neil.
Looks we're with across. Him.
You're with him?
Oh, with me, they are.
You don't have a reservation?
We were gonna stay in his room.
Okay, well.
Actually, can you check a reservation for Walford?
Walford, indeed. Sir, yes, I believe I do have a reservation under that name. Just a moment, and he reaches down, he goes through some papers, and he's just like, Robert?
Yes.
Robert Walford, is that you?
Yes.
Yes, sir, you are not, you do not have a reservation. However, you are listed as the guest on a room of a Reuven Labolas? And immediately you recognize the name
Labolas.
Of the soldier that you were in that room with.
In the dreams. Oh. Okay. That's crazy.
For like a long period of time, you were trying to deconstruct the code, and he had the box. He had like the backpack.
Right.
He's like...
the radio.
You're listed as a guest on the room of Reuven Labolas?
Yes. Yes. I'll take my key.
Certainly, certainly, sir. Turns around, grabs a key, passes it over to you, tells you the room number, 505.
Comstone. Mr. and Mrs. Comstone.
Ah, yes. Well, why didn't you say so? Mr. and Mrs. Comstone, we have you right here. Boop, 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 boom. And he's like going through some paperwork after he had passed Bobby's key off to him. Sorry, just making a note here of how to destroy you real quick. okay. He says, Mr. and Mrs. Comstone, of course, of course. Turns around, grabs a key off the wall, passes it across to you. Room 1080. 10th floor.
Excuse me. And Vicky just looks so tired, and she's also in her 40s now. You can see, like, you know, she's got the veins around her eyes that are kind of sticking out a little bit more, and she has more sunken features than she did in her youth. And in this lighting, whatever, this like beautiful lighting, though, she just is feeling her age as she is exhausted.
She could drop dead at any minute, being in her 40s and all.
I'm just saying, she was shot earlier, and she's really tired, and she's a little crazy. But she leans across the counter. Do you have a Samuel Ricci?
Samuel Ricci? Well, yes, we do, but I'm afraid that's not his real name, if you weren't aware. Yes, he told us at check-in. His real name is Murray Comstone, as it turns out, and he's here staying with his sister. And he starts, like, going and looking through some paperwork. He's like...
Sorry.
Yes, he came and said he was staying with his sister, Camille.
Sister?
That's gotta be a mistake. Sam is my son. He's my son. He doesn't have a sister.
Of course. Well, yes, of course. Murray Comstone, Camille Comstone, son and daughter to Mr. and Mrs. Comstone.
Roger Vicky. Flashes back to, like, the first episode of Impossible Landscape Season 3, where he's on the plane and there's something about your daughter.
Season 4, like, says you recognize the girl. She looked like your daughter, Camille.
And Roger never had a daughter because he had his son, Cal, back in the other world. And that has always stuck with him. And now it's all come back to this moment.
Wait. Roger never had a daughter.
No. He just had Cal.
But who talked about the daughter?
It was on the plane that Roger was on.
In the opening scene of Impossible Landscapes.
We all remember that scene, but I don't remember part of that scene.
It's like you see your daughter, and I was like, I don't have a daughter, so I knew that something was changing. Right. It happened in that moment, and now, in episode 609. Camille Comstone enters the scene.
Enter Camille Comstone.
Wait, but like, logistically though, I'm like, is that also actually Vicky's kid, or like, is it Roger's kid with someone else?
What's her name?
Naomi? What's her name?
Norma.
Yeah, Norma.
Like, is it another reality where you did have a daughter with Norma, and it's not Vicky's kid?
Don't overthink it, honey.
Vicky is looking wide-eyed.
You're saying this in front of Elmer, Vicky?
No, Vicky is looking wide-eyed at Roger because she doesn't know any of this. She doesn't know about this vision that Roger had or anything.
Elmer sees your eyes go wide as you look to Roger, and he just takes one look at you, and he's like, ah, well, now I see the resemblance. She has your eyes.
And, Marie, what room is he in?
He is in room 830.
And they're together in the room?
Well, that's what I was to understand, yes.
And what room are we?
You're in room 1080.
We're not on the same floor?
No, I'm sorry. Would you like me to see if I can get you on the 8th floor?
No.
Well, it'd be no problem at all. Do you mind waiting for a moment?
No, it's fine. We'll take 1080. We'll take 1080.
And Vicky is just kind of like behind the counter, like grabbing Roger's arm, like very tightly, his forearm. Just, she's like scared shitless. This is just so bizarre.
Excellent, Mr. and Mrs. Comstone. And
he just puts a hand on her hand.
And if I may, Mr. Comstone, you seem like a man of some means, of some strength. Some issues we've had in the hotel that I could use a strong pair of hands for. If you get settled and get your rest tonight, perhaps tomorrow, if you'd like to discuss, I could offer payment of some form, but I do need a pair of helping hands. But I don't want to burden you tonight.
Where do you live?
I live here at the hotel, sir.
You work here and you live here?
That is correct, sir.
What about the valet? Where does he live?
I'm sorry, who?
The valet. The one that asked us if we had a car.
There is no valet at the Hotel Broad Albin, sir.
Troy LaValet?
His name was Troy.
That guy over there. And he points at another, like, bellhop or something, if there is one.
Yeah, there is. There's like another bellhop walking around, not the guy that was outside.
Where does he live?
He lives in the hotel, sir. We all stay here. It makes it very convenient, you understand.
Of course. Roger says, I'm going to kill everyone in here.
Well, I wish you luck, sir. And he kind of smiles and laughs.
One more question. How many floors does this hotel have?
This hotel has 46 floors, ma'am.
And you know from when you were outside that it was about a 10-story building.
Right, of course.
Of course.
That you can
see. Like the fourth floor fuck. Is there an elevator?
Yes, ma'am. Indeed, of course. Right over this way, past the dining room.
And you see an elevator bank of like three elevators.
Is there a 13th floor? I'm superstitious.
No, of course not, ma'am. No 13th floor.
Right. Neil? What room are you?
Yes?
Where's everybody's room?
Neil is in 333. Bobby is in room 505.
Bobby, I'm just typing this down so I don't forget, so I know where to find people. Oh God, we're gonna get split up immediately.
No, let's all convene in Neil's room, I think, just to.
It's closest.
Yeah. Let's just go there first. Figure out what we're gonna do.
We could also stop in and see Marie and Camille.
Yeah, I mean, Vicky needs to see her son. This is like so
could
fucked
be,
up.
It could be a trap.
We could also go straight to the basement.
Well, there's also really good champagne in my room.
Oh, okay.
So we've got basement, Neil's room with champagne, Marie and Camille.
I feel like it's obvious.
You should, hold on. And he says, can I inquire about something?
Are you speaking to me, sir?
Fucking obviously, you're the only one here.
Sorry, I thought you had walked away.
I'm back.
Apologies, I was
back. Jack.
I was polishing keys.
Is there a...
You were saying. Anything, sir, anything.
Could I... imagine this might be confidential, but this place is weird. Could I inquire as to another guest staying here?
Another guest? Yes, sir.
Is there a Christopher Ricci?
I do not know that name, sir.
Does Vicky hear you ask this, or did you walk away?
I walked back, said that under my breath to him.
I do not know that name, sir. I don't have a reservation under that name.
If for any reason he checks in, would you let me know?
And he looks at you long and meaningfully, like you're sharing a secret. He says, of course, sir. Enjoy your stay, Mr. Comstone.
Oh, I will.
Okay. Stepping away from there, you guys want to go to Neil's room? Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's nail it up.
Yeah, champagne. Champers.
Let's check out what the amenities are for these rooms.
Yes. Yeah. Get our bearings and then go from there. Buzz on.
Yeah. Okay, sounds good. You step into an elevator and just go up two floors to the third floor and get out. And as you walk out of the elevator, looking to the left, looking to the right, you see the night floors. It is exactly what it looked like when you first stepped out through the roofed access door of the McAllister building. The decor, the rugs, the doors look the same. With one minor difference, I'm sorry, one seemingly minor difference is obviously a major difference, that these rooms are numbered and they all seem to have these gilded, golden, carved plates with the room numbers on them. Neil, I had mentioned this to you briefly in a vision, perhaps, that you saw, but it looks like the same exact font and feel as the safe deposit box that you saw in that bank, like the way that the numbering looks.
The fonts and the...
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the room numbers look like across each room, and you're easily enough able to find room 333. And your key goes into the lock. Click. It works. You open. As you step inside, you see what you would expect to see. A rather small, modest space. A tightly packed little New York City hotel room. A single bed, a single twin bed on an old wrought iron frame with a chair. You know, a small table with an ashtray and little else adorning it. There is like a framed picture of a woman in like black and white with like a pearl necklace just looking off to the side. Looks like a kind of an artistic print photograph, but you're not sure exactly who it is. That's really only the only decoration in the room. Otherwise, yeah, it's pretty meager and is, like I said, almost you get the sense that it's been a little let go. Not very well taken care of. A little dusty, a little dirty.
I'm going to start just sort of parsing over the space. Like he gets down on his hands and knees, like he looks under the bed. It's like takes a little sample of dust on his fingertips, like... That, like, tastes it, goes into the bathroom, runs the faucets, like, all that stuff. Just while whatever else is happening, that's what he's doing.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, as you're sampling through, you don't come across anything unusual.
Everything seems pretty normal. Oh, I'm sorry. I should get rid of this music. It's not there now. It was playing lightly in the elevator. And then as you stepped out and like, ding, the doors, that music faded behind you. And the calls are quiet.
All right. Where's the champagne?
Yeah, where's the...
It has not yet arrived.
We have... Look, come on. All right, Jesus.
Vicky screams. A blood-curdling scream.
Yeah, I pick up a lamp and just start smashing like mirrors and windows and screaming, champagne!
Can I do... This is weird because it's like I'm not searching for anything, so I don't know if it's like a search or an alertness, but Vicky definitely is looking around this room. I don't know what she's looking for, though. Like, I guess I just want to look more closely at this room, open up drawers and stuff. I don't know.
Is there a view outside? Is there a window?
Oh, yeah. Are there windows?
There is a window, yeah. A draped window. So you go and pull open the drapes.
There goes the sanity.
You pull open. Yeah. You pull that you just got
Francis,
back.
Francis right. said it. Francis said it.
You see an elephant with 9 tusks walking on a river made of cream cheese.
This is fine.
You come to this window, part the curtain, and you look out and you hear the vaguely honking horns and see the lights of New York City splayed out in front of you. What you just walked up from.
It looks modern.
It looks modern. Okay. Actually, you're only on the 3rd floor, so you don't see much of anything. You just see another building immediately next to you. But then down on the street, you do see like a car goes by, modern car. Yeah, does not appear to be. Now, this is different from the night floors, for sure. What is the same, what I meant to say is the same, if that wasn't clear, is just the paint on the walls, the rug, the door, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right. Okay.
Well, this is good. If we jump out of this window, we might go back to our world.
Let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Let's leave that as a last ditch option.
Okay. We're here.
We're here, and Vicky takes out the note again.
Yeah.
And we have to find JC and Lynch. Maybe we should see Sam before we go to the basement.
Sam's
and just reiterating that you're all completely exhausted.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I have to sleep.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
Also, Sam's not here.
Do you think it's safe to go to our respective rooms and sleep?
No. Maybe.
I don't want to.
Yeah. No. Okay. That's fine.
I'm worried that we'll never find each other again.
So we're just supposed to pile on top of each other on top of this twin bed?
There's a single bed.
Like the 7 fucking dwarfs.
I call Big Spoon. Okay? Big Spoon.
I think we're probably fine to retire to our respective rooms. This isn't the night floors. It's different.
It's not the night floors now, but if I fall asleep, what happens?
I need to sleep.
Forever.
I think Roger's right. I need to sleep. If I don't sleep, I'm not going to be any use. I can't think. I can't think about anything right now.
I don't sleep anymore. May I sit in a chair and watch you two sleep?
You know, Neil, I think Roger and I will go to our room.
Bobby's down to stay awake because he's still jarred from that whole experience with the guys and the guns, so... He wants to keep awake, so he says to Neil, let's wait for the champagne.
Good.
We'll smoke some cigarettes.
Good, yes. We smoke. Yeah. And he pulls out a little thing of methamphetamines.
Nice. Bag. Score. Yeah.
You guys really are perfect for each other.
Yeah.
This drug's going. Pass him around.
He has a pack of cards too. He pulls out a pack of like bicycle playing cards.
Excellent.
And the meth.
And the mess.
Friday already?
I think, Vicky gets up and she's just bedraggled and she's kind of waiting for Roger by the door to walk to the elevator and go to the 10th floor.
We'll be in the Cumstone Suite. 1080 if you need us.
That's what it is, the Cumstone Suite. Okay. Bobby, what are you doing?
I'm staying with Neil. We're gonna stay with champagne, do meth, and play
Texas cards. Hold'em.
Okay, great. So the Cumstones leave and go to the elevator.
Just so funny. So she like never took this. His name. It's so funny that she's being called Cumstone.
Just a couple of Cumstones.
Just a couple of Cumstones.
New hit sitcom coming to ABC this fall.
The Cumstones.
Okay, you two come to the elevator and... You know what? You get in the elevator. There's no issue, and you go to the 10th floor. You go
question
up.
In the elevator. Yeah. Is there a B button for basement?
Yes, there are basement levels B1, okay. B2. Okay. You notice that, cool. And then you head to the 10th floor.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. You head to the 10th floor, and you get out there and. Find your room 1080, open it up.
I want to knock on the room to 1078.
1078, you knock on the door?
Mm-hmm.
It's 1 o'clock in the morning, man.
I know.
It's rude.
It's almost 2 o'clock. Knock, knock, knock. No answer.
Roger, they're probably sleeping. What are you doing?
Louder.
No answer.
All right, now I'll go to 1082 on the other side of our room. Dum, 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 dum.
You start to hear a sound. A rustling. Someone's moving in there.
Gung, 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 gung.
You hear a shing, slight sliding of metal. And you can see in the room number, you can see there's a tiny little hole between the numbers, that is an eye, whatever, yeah,
people.
A peephole, and you see as it. This scratch of metal happens, you see a little bit of light coming from behind there as someone has opened the peephole to look through.
I put my thumb on it.
The door doesn't open.
Gun, 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 gun. It's okay.
Who is it? Who are you?
What's your name?
I'm not telling you my name. what are you thinking?
Do you live here?
It's 2 o'clock in the morning.
Do you live here?
I stay here.
Where do you go when you don't stay here?
Who's asking?
Roger Cumstone.
I can't see this, but his eyes go wide. I don't know any Roger Cumstone. Roger, go away. Let me sleep.
Let's go.
All right. Thank you for your time.
And you walk away and return to 1080.
Back on 10.
Start not just
one more question.
Just rinse and repeat for the rest of the night.
One more question. What's every door on the floor.
What's your name?
What's your name?
How old are you and how tall are you?
It's 2 in the morning. So that's not what I asked.
Bang, 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 bang. How much do you weigh? How much do you weigh?
Are you naked?
Oh, that's good.
You
go into your room or not?
Yeah, yes, I want to know what our room looks like.
Go into the room, looks the same as Neil's, with a double bed, slightly larger, and but otherwise, yeah, same as Neil's. Nothing of note.
Well, Vicky sits on the edge of the bed.
Roger goes to the bathroom, pees with the door open.
And
well, you're very comfortable together. You're a married couple.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's normal.
Two
and
kids.
Vicky kind of lays on the bed, kind of almost like fetal position. You know, it's kind of nice, Roger.
What's that?
It's kind of nice, you know, the idea that we would come here as Mr. and Mrs. Comstone. It's kind of funny, isn't it kind of funny?
Yeah, I guess it's, zips up. I don't know, is it funny? Is funny the word you would use for this?
I don't know. It feels...
Hold on, I got my wiener.
Zipper?
Fuck.
You always do that.
Put on my fucking foreskin.
Some things never change.
Son of a bitch.
That's so like you. I miss moments like this.
I miss moments like this.
Fuck.
God, it's so funny. I miss moments like this.
But I'm sorry, yeah. I don't know if I would use the word funny.
Fuck. I think it's funny. I think it's, you know, in another world, we would come to a hotel in New York, just us, to get away, you know, on a staycation. We would book a hotel, and it would be one maybe like this. We would come here together.
Roger,
I just think it's kind of funny. And she's like wiping a tear.
Do you ever think that maybe there's a world where you and I are still together?
No.
And happy?
What?
Like a different version of this world where you and I are together. Because I think there's a version where I'm with someone else.
I mean, yeah, sure. When we got separated, I thought about that. You know, what's... timelines, whatever people say, like, oh, you make a decision and you step on a butterfly. I thought maybe if we stayed together, what would I be doing? Where would my life be? Would we have another kid? Would it be a girl? And she's like wiping another tear. I don't know. What's to say that it's not right? That it's not the correct one.
How come you never had kids with Christopher?
I don't know. We were so busy with work. He wanted them. I was worried. Money and time and then it kind of got too late. And then I met you.
Your knight in shining armor.
Will you just lay with me, Roger? Will you lay with me until I fall asleep?
Yeah.
Thanks. And she just lays down, and as he lays down, she, you know, just his hulking body. She just, like,
she manages
curls up
to hug almost 30% of his torso. The full stretch of her arms.
Be careful, be careful. I hurt down there.
So she was going for it, like, yeah. No, immediately.
She just, the way she positioned herself.
Right on.
Easy,
the
easy.
Penis. I hit my head right on the tip.
It's like one of Louis XIV's pillows.
I was gonna say it's really nice, and she actually just lays down and almost immediately goes to sleep, like in the comfort of being with Roger and this familiarity, smelling him and like being close to him, and she just like
when she's asleep, Roger like pulls his arm away from her and gets up, goes to the hallway door, and leaves the room.
Then we'll be back right after this break.
welcome back. I'm excited to find out what the hell Roger is doing. Can't Roger ever just go to sleep? But I wonder if now is the time for more investigation on Roger's part, or if he begins in this moment slowly killing every single resident of the hotel.
Methodically.
Let's find out right now. The door closes. She click quietly enough, but Vicky is not rustled at all, and she stays completely asleep. And then let's just cut into the hallway to Roger. What is he doing?
Roger's walking towards the stairwell, and assuming there is one.
Keeps walking. You see a sign. It says stair, like a very old school sign.
He pulls out his gun and makes sure that it's loaded. He's kind of checking that as he walks towards the stairwell. Shoves it back in his pants. And he goes to the stairwell, opens the door, and descends to the 8th floor.
Okay. Walks down the steps, 2 floors, re-enters on the 8th.
And he walks up to Murray and Camille's room. 8, I think it was 808. Oh, was it 3?
8:30. Was it 8:30?
It was 8:30. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's what I heard.
I wrote it down.
We see him slowly walking down the hall. Is your gun in your hand or is it back in your waistband?
I'd say it's, you know, it's in his hand behind his back.
In his hand behind his back. Safety on?
Safety off.
You going to shoot your children?
He knocks on 832. Like
no. Just knocks with the butt of the gun.
What's your name?
What's your name? As soon as the eye hole opens, bang! Put the bullet right through the peephole. He walks up to room 830. We see you standing out front of it. See a shot from the back. We see a gun in your hand behind your back, and you're standing there in front of the door.
Dun, 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 dun.
You hear nothing.
Bum, 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 louder and longer.
Nothing.
Roger cracks his neck, steps back, and kicks at the doorknob right on the, like, knob, right above the knob area to try and kick the door straight open.
What is your strength? Times 5?
18, so 90.
Okay. You rear back. Boom! Literally just broke my desk when I did that. I was trying to, like, imitate it under the desk, and I hit, like, a framing piece of the wood, and it cracked.
It's forever.
You tried to imitate it, and you replicated it.
And I replicated it, yeah. All right, so boom! The door goes flying open, comes, breaks off the part of the wall that, like, where the strip where the hole is that the lock goes into just kind of, like, partially rips off the wall. There's this jagged piece of wood just, like, kind of hanging off to the side. And as you step into the room, you're immediately struck with the coppery smell of blood.
Blood.
And immediately you see on the floor, blood. And the edge of a bed is in your vision.
Okay. Awareness of the hallway behind me. Do you mean a roll?
No one seems to be opening any doors or moving down the hallway.
Roger's not concerned about, like, the rules of decorum. Who is breaking into doors at this time of night in this fantasy land? All right, so he gone out. Walks into the room and is trying to see, is there anyone alive in here? Are there any bodies? He's very, very aware. Murray?
You walk into the room. You say, Murray?
Murray, it's Dad.
There's no response.
Come here, honey. Daddy's
home. Your heart starts thumping. Thump, 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 thump. Something is happening here. Something very, very strange. The blood on the floor, as you come around the curve, goes up onto the bed. The bed sheets have been pulled back and over, and the sheets themselves are soaked in blood. You see a small end table, and sitting on the end table is like an old school syringe. On the floor, directly next to the bed, is a leather satchel, a leather bag, a valise of a sort, that's turned over, and it's spilling out with cash.
We've seen this before.
Roger has seen this exact room before. Mm-hmm. You turn and look, because you know exactly where to look, and right there on the wall is written, "Where is my bottle?" on the wall. And all of a sudden, this realization flows through you as you recognize the handwriting as Murray's on the wall. And you recognize, and it was there in 1995 when you saw this place. Years before he was ever born. Give me a sanity check from the unnatural.
Just got that sanity back.
Critical success, 33 under 63.
Oh, wow. Larry.
1 point of sanity damage. You can deflect that, or you can tell me how it manifests in that moment.
I will take it. Humanity goes, Camille!
You hear nothing else. A quick search of the room. No one else is here.
Bathroom?
No one's in the bathroom. No blood in the bathroom. And you, of course, know exactly where to look. It's almost like deja vu. And you see a bundle rolled up just under the bed, and you know exactly what's in that bundle. Do you remember?
Pulls it out, lays it on the bed.
Cash?
2 shotguns.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
Shit.
Roger says,
you think about the shotgun that was in Christopher's hand in that ancient thing on the street, whatever, that Christopher thing, holding, it's the same shotgun.
As well, looks like I found Murray and Camille.
Double pop. He goes over to the syringe. When he first saw these back on the night floors, he assumed drugs. But now he sees these and he's taken back to the hospital. And he just says under his breath, Batsu. And he goes to like pick up the syringe and look like, is there anything in it?
There is a residue of some material in there and it does not look like Batsu. It doesn't look like red.
Smell like anything? Does it smell like?
I'm not sure what your medicinal knowledge is.
Yeah,
your
not
pharmaceutical great. Knowledge. It's not a smell you recognize. I'll say that.
All right. I'll do a search just to make sure I didn't miss anything, and because then I'll fail it and get to check the box, which I did. And then you just see the hallway with the broken door. And Roger steps out with 2 shotguns. The safety is now on the pistol.
And this is all like replaying. You did all this before. You walked back out into this hallway with 2 shotguns when you were in the night floors. If you remember, this is when you ran into Mark Rourke, the insurance salesman. You had 2 shotguns pointed at him. And he was like, please don't shoot me, buddy. Okay. What are you going to do now?
Go back to the stairwell and up to room 10 and go into my room and
lie next to Vicky.
Okay. We'll cut to Vicky opening her eyes, and there's light pouring in through the window. You see Roger asleep next to you, a shotgun in each hand that wasn't there when you went to sleep. I'm just kidding. Is there are there shotguns in your hand? Slept. Did you stow them?
Just sleep.
Did he sleep with them?
Too gross.
One of the shotguns is pushed up against your face, like the muzzle. And you're just like, what in the? So you wake up and Roger's still asleep. It's early. Feels like, you know, 6 a.m. But that low sun in New York just rising up is kind of cutting into the window.
Yeah, she's going to do the same thing, like move the shotgun off of her slowly as to not disturb Roger. She's going to splash some water on her face in the bathroom.
Ah! And you're struck with pain. As you start to splash, you remember that your collarbone has basically been broken and hasn't been set.
The sling
stabilized it enough that it wasn't painful, but as soon as you slept and took that off, it swelled, and it's just in bad shape.
Yeah, she's going to need Neil to, like, help her today to try to make this livable.
Go ahead and roll 1d6 willpower points to recover for your night's rest.
I needed that. Okay.
Neil and Bobby, we'll come back to you in a second, but you guys both have sleep disorders, so you guys would have a hard enough time even without the champagne party. So you have to make a sanity check, right? You have to make a sanity check to see if you can sleep.
Yeah.
That's how the...
Okay.
Shit.
Yeah, 1 second. I'm just going to grab my book. I forgot to grab it. It's right here. Okay. Bobby, can I presume you failed your sanity check?
No, I was trying to get the book up just to make sure. Make a sand test. If it fails, Asian wastes repeatedly in terror.
Yeah.
A possibility great. Of great. Thank you. Getting. Okay. All right. Jesus. All right. My sand's 26. Come on, baby. Ooh. Okay. I rolled a 9 under.
Phenomenal. Under so 26. You get a full night's sleep. Go ahead and roll a D6 for. Wait, your sand is 26 after getting 5 back? You were 21?
Yeah, I was at 21, man. It was the guys with the gas mask, just before the guys with the gas mask. If I can
get
to the breaking point. All right. So 1d6.
1d6 willpower points.
3.
Okay. That's all something.
All right.
What about Neil? Neil, sanity test?
I got a 10 under 35.
Wow. Good job, guys. Hell all right. Yeah. So roll 1d6 willpower. Same with you, Troy.
I get 1d6 willpower back?
Yeah, willpower points back.
2.
Ugh, 1.
Boo.
I got 5 for mine, and it goes back up to not a 9. Had a lot.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Oof, man. 5.
All right, Vicky, we'll cut to you waking up in the room, bleary-eyed. Roger's still asleep there. He's got shotguns in his hand that weren't there before. You have this vague image of him walking through this hotel or through the night floors with 2 shotguns 20 years ago. Strange image. You wonder if you're dreaming, but you're awake.
She's going to do the exact same thing Roger did. She is going to leave the room.
Sneak out.
With her gun. Like
roll a stealth opposed by Roger's.
Awareness. I was going to say Roger.
This is going to be tough.
This is great. I'll be able to check off my stealth because I'm going to fail.
Do you want to roll opposed alertness?
Oh yeah. My God.
Alertness.
I mean, I actually rolled under my stealth. Which I wish I failed. I rolled a 12 under 14.
And I actually rolled a 6 under 86.
So you win, Vicky!
Wow.
Amazing!
How foxed the cumstone.
Wow.
He's in a deep sleep.
Yeah.
Damn.
Wow. I never thought she'd be able to sneak out without waking Roger. And you come out into the hallway. You do the exact same thing?
Yeah, she wants to come out into the hallway.
Well, this is going to look a lot different to you. Because you're going to come to the room and see a door broken in. Blood everywhere.
God. And Roger's got two shotguns.
Jesus. Yeah, but there's no evidence those shotguns came from here. Right. It looks like somebody broke in.
Yeah, what has he done? Like,
killed Murray.
I mean, she wants to go to check in on him. So I go, the door's broken. Like, that's the same room.
Yeah, the door's broken in.
She freaks out, like runs in, is looking around.
And you see blood everywhere. You recognize Murray's handwriting on the wall in some like ichor. Blue black ichor, and it says, "Where is my bottle?" Exclamation mark.
She's searching.
I'm sorry, question mark.
She's searching for
my
what?
Bottle? Where's my bottle?
Shut up.
Where's my bottle? She's searching for like a cause of the blood. Like there's no bodies, obviously, but is there like weapons? Where did the blood originate from? Did it travel into the room?
You see on the bed over top of the blood that's on the soaked into the sheets, you see like a blanket, like a heavy, heavy blanket that has been, I mean, you know, as a player, it was Roger unrolling shotguns, but you don't really know what it is, but it's on top of the blood and there's no blood on it.
Yeah, she
moves. You
she
see
moves
next it. To the bed a leather bag with cash, and the cash is just spilling out. And like I said before, you see on the end table an old school, like 40s, 50s looking syringe with some material in it.
She looks at the money. Is this modern cash?
No. The money looks like, you would know, I would say, as a federal agent, especially a fraud agent and the mail and everything like that, you could identify these as like 1933 U.S. T-bills or some shit. I don't remember. This is exactly what happened before. He saw this room before. Roger did. But I don't think he ever gave you guys any details on what he saw.
Vicky has no idea.
So she would know he saw this in 1995. Never knowing at the time that it was twisted around in time and could have been his own son.
So then she's just going to like move the sheets on the bed now that she knows this is sort of the source of the blood. She moves the blanket that the shotguns were wrapped in off, and she's looking for like a knife or signs of Murray, like his clothing, you know, anything that would point to he is actually here.
Well, it's his handwriting on the wall, but otherwise, go ahead and roll a search.
Okay. Oh, 59 over 57.
Check it off. There's nothing else I haven't already mentioned.
Okay, she is going to go back upstairs and she's going to wake Roger up in a panic.
Okay.
The minute you open the door, Roger's... Hey. Wait. Did you see?
He's not... There's blood everywhere, Roger. He's not here, and we have to find him. And he wrote on the wall, and she tells him all this stuff. Like, he already knows this. She tells him all this stuff.
It's not real. None of this is real.
What do you mean it's not real?
It's not real in the way you think it's real. Don't worry. Don't let your emotions take control of you.
Roger, if Murray is in this building, we have to find him to help him. He's going to get lost like Abigail. He's going to get lost like all of them.
You called him Murray.
Are you going to help me, Roger?
Yes. But you have to trust me. I can see through the veil.
Okay. I have to go to Neil's room. I need him to set my collarbone. I think I slept on it bad, and it's really, really painful.
Do you want me to pop it back for you?
No, I want Neil to pop it back for me because he's a doctor, Roger.
He's also insane.
That's Dr. Insane to you.
That's Dr. Insane.
That's Dr. Crazy.
I can pop it back. It's not a big deal.
Just go. I want to check that we can still get to Neil's room and check on Bobby. I don't want to get lost. We have to meet back up with
just
them.
Saying I can bug.
Roger?
You'd rather have Neil do it. Backwards talking Yoda.
Roger? Let it go.
All right, let's cut to Bobby and Neil. Bobby and Neil, we come a shot into the room, and Neil is in a chair. Bobby is laying in bed, and both of you are sound asleep.
Yeah. I feel like Bobby's got a cigarette burned down in his fingers.
Yeah.
ow.
He wakes up, but you got enough sleep to actually recover some willpower points. Bobby, you see some sunlight coming through the windows, but you're still in the hotel room. What are you thinking? What do you want to do here?
Neil's still asleep?
Yeah, he's just in the chair with his chin in his chest, just kind of...
Bobby's just going to get his bearings, take a breath and remember where he is. And he reaches into his pocket, and he's still got the room 505 key.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking at it, and he's remembering Lobolus, and he's like... He's just gonna hold on to it for a second, and he's gonna wake up Neil gently.
Okay, we see Bobby touching Neil's shoulder, and Neil, you wake up.
Easy.
Wakes up from the night terrors.
Easy. We got some sleep. Are you?
Sorry. Real quick, yeah. Neil, you dream intensely again of these long tunnels of brick underground and these shapes of bottles along the walls and turning into one that is its own sort of like small room, a bottle at the end of it that says J.C. Lintz on it. Like, you see this again, and now it's even in more vivid detail, and you know you're close. You're getting close.
And I grab Bobby by the shirt front and I say, The basement.
Okay.
Bottle the basement now.
Okay. Now. All right. You're surprisingly strong.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get the others and we'll go. We'll go now.
Yeah. Yes. I gather up my playing cards scattered all over the table.
There's an empty bottle of champagne on the ground.
Yeah.
You guys stink of booze.
Pop a couple more methamphetamines.
Yeah.
Pop a few breakfast. More pills. Put and then some corn flakes.
Yeah.
And at that moment, you hear a knock on your door.
Neil takes the bottle of champagne, Yayala, smashes it on the edge of the desk and comes up to the door and looks through the people.
You see Vicky's face, all fish-eyed, right in front of you. Right in front of you. You see right up her nostrils.
Roger's not answering.
She's not through the door. Wet lady.
Wet lady.
White licorice.
White licorice.
I open the door.
You open the door to see Vicky looking in pain, holding up her arm in a sling, rubbing her bad shoulder. Roger just behind her with two shotguns.
Okay. Now I know everything's okay. So he tosses the bottle, impaling Bobby in the chest, killing him instantly. And I bring... escort Vicky into the room and take out my bag and start trying to reset her, treat her her arm.
Yeah, she tells Neil, and in so much pain.
Okay. Go ahead and give me a, is it first aid? I can't remember.
Let's fix this for good. Let's do surgery.
Surgery. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Do surgery.
Damn. On,
plenty of bottle shards.
Troy, I'm sorry. Did either of you ever bring him the syringe? Did you take the syringe or just leave it?
I didn't say I took it.
Vicky probably took it. I mean,
does Vicky roll sanity on seeing Murray's handwriting, by the way?
Oh, no. Yeah, you got to roll sanity for that. I'm
sorry.
Sorry.
I kept thinking you didn't have to roll it because you were hadn't seen it before, but I forgot like about Murray's
that was
handwriting.
A moment. That was a moment for you.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Fine. Here we go. Oh, 26 under 58.
Ooh,
okay.
Nice.
Okay, one point of sanity damage. And do you take the syringe or did you leave it?
I think she's taking anything that was evidence, and there really wasn't a lot there, so maybe she takes a few.
A bag full of money.
She takes a few of the bills, and
so not all the bills. just one of the things of bills.
She takes like a few stacks of them.
This looks like an expensive hotel.
She removes all the wallpaper from the room.
This will pay for our night here, and she takes the syringe as well, and then she produces that evidence while Neil is like helping her. She takes it out of her bag and she goes, I went to Murray's room and there's blood everywhere and he wrote on the wall, but Roger says it's not him. So if we find him, we would know, but he wasn't there. And I found this money and I found this syringe. Neil, I don't know if you know what this is.
Could I do a pharmacy roll?
What's your pharmacy?
70.
Yeah, nice. You don't need to roll. It's heroin.
Ooh. Oh.
You can tell right away that this is heroin.
Heron.
Is Murray a jazz player?
No.
No.
He's a kid. He's a kid.
Just check.
He's a kid in college.
And
you
upon
find any more?
No. No, Neil.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's not enough. Sorry.
If you do find any more, please bring it to me for testing.
Okay.
And now I'm going to do treat you.
Okay.
41 under a much larger number.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we'll say you treat Vicky. Are you down any hit points at this point?
I
can't remember if you're still down actual hit points.
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you can recover 1d4 hit points.
Awesome. Need that.
And then I'll be selective about what you take penalties on in terms of your skills. You'll probably take penalties to some physical skills, but not mental ones at this stage. The pain is not aggravating you that much.
Awesome. I'm back up to full hit points, so that's thank you, Neil.
Okay, great. Also, in this exchange, I think it would be clear, Neil, I mean, you tell me if you want to share, but Murray's plastered over the wall, you know, where is my bottle, all this bottle shit, the dreams that you keep seeing, and you said we need to go to the basement. It stands to reason that Murray also thinks that his bottle is in that basement and that everybody's bottle is in that basement. That's kind of like what you take away from these dream scenes.
Yeah, I definitely, yeah, it's just like, the answers are below, down the basement we go. You better, I think. Let's go. Basement.
Yeah, let's do that.
I almost went there last night.
All right.
Everybody on board?
Let's go.
So what's the plan? You're going to take the elevator to the basement?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we're going to follow that. Vicky pulls out the map and gives it to Neil, and Roger and Bobby shows everybody, and it's our best bet.
Going to B1.
Okay. You all stand outside of the elevator bank, waiting for it. And this old school elevator, you know, bing, opens, and the gate opens up, shink, and the doors open. And this time, sitting inside the elevator is a small, frail old man who's sitting kind of like an operator, sitting at the side of the elevator, all the buttons laid out in front of him. He's in this oversized bellhop's outfit and his pants like pool around his feet, like it's if it doesn't quite fit right. He's so skinny and frail. And he just looks up and he says, Dr. Bachman, good morning. Do you have some guests today? As you start like stepping into the elevator and you recognize this guy, you saw this guy in the Ritz elevator in Boston. And I think Vicky was with you, just Vicky. And Vicky, you didn't see anybody.
The guy was
but
there
now
too.
You fully see this like older man, this older elevator operator.
Oh,
inside the elevator who seems to recognize Neil, but not you.
Did I get his name?
I can't remember, but you could ask him now.
I didn't catch your name, friend.
Well, it's Charlie, Dr. Bachman.
Charlie.
You don't remember Charlie?
I remember you, Charlie.
To the lobby today, sir. You're heading out for the day?
Yes. Might I say, you're looking mighty frail today, Charlie.
Oh, well, I can't keep anything down right now. I have some sort of a flu.
Here, and take these. And I give him a bottle of poison.
Here,
you'll
yourself.
Be right as rain in a few hours.
This is medicine, Dr. Bachman?
Yes, good medicine.
Well, I should thank you with perhaps a dinner.
And he presses the lobby button.
Actually,
Charlie. No.
Yeah.
The doors start to close.
What is it, sir?
B for basement. B.
Oh, the basement today. Okay.
And he presses the B button. So this thing starts going down. Obviously not for long. You're going from Neil's floor. It goes into the lobby and opens up. The gate opens. The doors open. And he's like, sorry, sir. Just a moment. And you're waiting for the doors to close. As you do, Neil, you see something rather strange. Across the lobby from where you are, some distance, in the dining hall area, seated in an oversized, like, leather chair, and, like, weirdly kind of sleeping, you see an older, middle-aged to older man in prison, in a prisoner's uniform, in this chair, like, snoozing. And immediately your mind goes to the horror of running from the clown in the backstage area underneath the thing when everybody was seeing a lot of strange things. And in that moment, over a gap in the distance, you saw a man in prisoner outfit like wave to you, and you see this exact man in that moment, just like taking a snooze in a chair in the dining area, and bing, the doors close again. But you definitely recognize him as sitting there. And
what floor? That was the lobby?
It was in the lobby. Yeah. Just like sitting in the dining room. And the doors close, bing, and the elevator begins to descend. It gets down to the basement level.
Basement level, sir.
Opens up. Charlie's like, this is my level.
I'd love to have you down, Dr. Bachman, as a thank you for the medicine. If I could perhaps cook a meal for you. I'm an excellent cook. Perhaps we could have dinner sometime.
Oh, yes. I am a big fan of salads.
Excellent. I'll make you a salad. Perhaps tonight. Are you free tonight?
Yes, tonight. You should have just enough time.
Excellent. Well, I'll take this medicine right away and make sure that I am ready to go for dinner tonight.
Wonderful, Charlie.
Shall we say 4:30?
4:30, the gentleman's hour of salad.
That's what they call it.
That's what they call it.
That's Emily Post. That's what did a whole chapter on it.
But the elevator door opens, and he, you know, clearly gives you just waves his hand, saying, you know, you can head off this way.
Bye. Okay.
Bye forever.
Yeah, bye forever.
Bye forever. Jesus Christ. So,
we all know it's poison, and we all stood there in silence as Neil poisoned the elevator operator.
If he wasn't going to take us to the basement, I was going to slam his head through the elevator wall.
Yeah. Press it into all the buttons.
Yeah, I was fine with him poisoning.
You just can't let an old person live in this game.
Yeah. Roger has killed every person like over 70.
They're all
in this
complicit.
Game. He's killed them.
They're all complicit in the masquerade.
Elder Abuse Green.
Yeah, Elder Abuse Green.
You you come out of the elevator and the basement, perhaps not what you expect at first. It does not appear to just be stone or brick. It's not what you had seen in your dreams, Neil. This appears to be a slightly more rugged, slightly more unfinished area of hotel that still has rooms and stuff like that. As you're walking, you know, perhaps the carpet isn't as nice, or the floors are not as finished, or the walls are not as finished, but and the numbers on the rooms are not this kind of gold etched, you know, kind of pretty looking vibe. You get, you know, these kind of just like very functional, you know, tin little signs of the numbers on each room. And you're walking past, perhaps looking for an entrance into this other area, when you see, you come across one room that is open, where the door is open. Who's walking in front? Is it Neil? Is it Roger? Who's like leading the way down this hallway? Yeah, about two. You can go about two wide in this hallway.
I mean, I'll probably be in front. It was.
I'll be next.
It was my insistence that we original insistence.
Yeah,
that we
I'll be next here, to so. Neil.
All right, so the two of you are walking along, and you notice that one of these rooms is open. The door is just sitting open. And looking inside, as you're passing through, you can't help but see a man sitting near the back of this room. The room is almost completely empty. There's just raw wooden floorboards on the floor, and you see very little furniture, perhaps a single wooden dining room chair that is, you know, very simple, very plain. But then this man is seated in the back in another chair, kind of hunched over, and he's wearing what looks to be a vest. Like a three-piece suit without the jacket on, right? That's kind of the vibe you're getting. Like a white dress shirt with a tannish, dark brown vest on behind it. And you see dress pants that go down to some buckled loafers on these brown shoes. And this, you see this from behind. This man is hunkered over some sort of a, like, metal like tub of some kind, like a huge pail, really, like a metal vat of some kind. And he's just kind of like hunched over, leaning, and it's just sort of wheezing a bit, like and even from that distance you can see that he is wet, that his arms are wet, and he's just kind of like leaning over this thing. Do you keep moving? Do you investigate? What do you do here? I think
cautiously I'm going to enter the room and kind of make my way over to him in the tub.
Roger's right behind him with two shotguns.
Right.
Yeah.
Neil, you slowly begin to walk up to this man. You see he's got thick black hair that has kind of spiraled down in front of his eyes a little bit, and it's all a little bit wet. As you get up closer, you see that, indeed, this is some sort of a tub, a washing tub of some kind, and it is filled pretty close to the brim with a murky kind of water. And he's leaned over, wheezing, and maybe slightly crying. As walking kind of around the man, you see floating in the water small feet of what looks like a child. And we'll see you next time.
Oh, I knew it. Oh, I didn't want to say anything and interrupt the action. I fucking it's Asa Darabonte.
It's Asa Darabonte.
Oh my
god. It's Asa Darabonte, the girl.
Yes, the kids.
The kids.
Oh my god.
Oh, Asa.
This is a nightmare.
Click, click.
This is a nightmare. Yeah, exactly. Nightmare. Two shotguns to the back.
bro. But we'll see. We'll see next week what you guys do. This is wild.
Oh my god.
It's horrifying.